So you learn that in many respects, you have an obligation to what it is that's stirring inside you, because essentially it's not about you. You know, the world is round. So it really is about you emitting something to someone else.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. It's the podcast for artists, makers, and content creators, where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. I've got a great one for you today, friends. You're going to love it. And just a heads up, it's a bit lengthy, but just a great conversation with my guest today. But before we get to that, I also want to bring to your attention that I have been creating some assets for Canva. And if you're familiar with Canva, you know that it is a powerful online tool that enables you to make graphic design. So if you need some social media graphics, you need some flyers, you need other kind of assets for whatever your business or your needs are, you can go on there for a free account, sign up, and just have at it. Now, sometimes there's an issue because, you know, if you're faced with a blank page, you're not really sure what to do. Maybe graphic design isn't within your gifting, and you're really not sure how to construct something that is visually engaging. And so I have stepped into the gap a little bit there, where maybe people can't afford full-on custom design, but they want something that looks visually engaging and professional, and they need sort of a plug-and-play option. And so I've created some Canva templates for social media, for Instagram specifically, Instagram posts, and another set for stories. I have them right now available for fellow podcasters, as well as anyone who might have a personal brand, who's a speaker, who has a business where you're trying to share some maybe quote cards, and maybe you guest on some podcasts or some different shows, you're a speaker. Like I said, really anything that you would need to share some information, plug in your photo, your messaging, change some brand colors, all that stuff is done really easily with these Canva templates that I've created. And you can find them at my graphic design site, which is MikeBrennanDesigns.com. And they're only $39 each. You get access to these templates. There's 20 in a pack. And I even have a little PDF guide for you so that there's some instruction. Try to make it as easy as possible for you to get in, create the assets you need, and then get out and have something professional, easy, and shareable. So if you'd like more information about that, you can visit my website there. I'll put that in the show notes, a direct link to those in my shop. As well, I have some typefaces and some other vector art, and I'm continuing to add there because I know that having these resources available to various people, it's a real help. And so I want to be able to step up and be a help to people like that. So if that's you, check out those assets. And as a little surprise, if you put in the code 10 off, you will get 10% off whatever is in that shop. So enjoy. And if I can help you with that, just reach out and let me know. Now, on to today's show. My guest is none other than Jonathan Lee Iverson. Now, Jonathan Lee Iverson is a huge personality. You're going to hear him on the show today, like I said, and our conversation is just awesome. He has so many nuggets of wisdom. He has had experiences that you and I just can't even wrap our minds around. He is most notably known as the youngest and first black ringmaster of Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus, which of course we're all familiar with. And he served as that ringmaster, and he was actually the last ringmaster because that circus closed in 2017. You're talking 146 years history of the circus, the greatest show on earth, right? He was the guy in the middle there, the ringmaster, you know, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages. I mean, that was him. And he was voted one of the most fascinating people by Barbara Walters. He's been part of Jeopardy question, I believe, twice. I mean, that alone is just cool. That's, you know, we can't even imagine that. But we also spend actually more time talking about his earlier childhood years as a member of the Boys Choir of Harlem. And I mean, the experiences he had and the things that he learned there really set him up for the opportunities that came in his life. And he was able to be on stage with people like Stevie Wonder and Patti Austin and Roberta Flack and Tony Bennett. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I mean, he's been to the White House and you just, again, it's an amazing, amazing journey. And so we talk about that. And we also talk about just some of the changing, shifting things that are happening right now and how he's having to adapt and reinvent himself a little bit now that his circus career has come to a close. And, you know, when you have that wealth of experience behind you, what do you do? Like, where does that leave you and where do you go from there? And so we talk about some of those things too. So if you're in a place right now, a season where you're thinking about reinvention, you're thinking about pivoting and trying to figure out what comes next, I think you're really going to love this conversation with Jonathan Lee Iverson. So without further ado, here is our creative chat. Jonathan, welcome to Creative Chats Podcast. I'm excited to have you here today. Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate it. I'm really happy to be here. You know, I'm a fan of your work. I'm a fan of anybody who draws me so well.
That's awesome. Yeah, it was a good time. We connected at Terry Weaver's The Thing Conference. Right. And I remember specifically, you know, you were the surprise guest, you know, that was coming and we're like, ooh, who is it? Who is it? And then you came in and I remember too, he didn't give you the heads up that it was a little more casual. So you were like, you were dressed up nice, you know, you're looking fine in your suit and everybody else, you know, is there kind of all creative looking. And, but you got up on stage and you just shared so much of your story and your heart and, just incredible, incredible experiences you've had and love your spirit and your sense of joy. And, you know, I'm excited for you to be able to share that with the audience today as well. So thank you.
Absolutely.
So I would love for you to just give us a little snippet of, you know, who is Jonathan and what do you do?
Well, I'm a proud native New Yorker now residing in Florida. I'm a choir boy who, you know, I'm a choir boy who went on to be a ringmaster. I have to say I've had a charming life, in my opinion. I really have. I was in a world famous boy choir when I was younger. In my youth, you know, I got to travel around the world and play on a lot of the world's most coveted stages and meet a lot of incredible people. And I can tell you, truly, youth is wasted on the young. I mean, I was in a company of, you know, some incredible people who I really couldn't appreciate at the time. You know, they were just, oh, that's just some old white dude or whatever. And turned out to be Tony Bennett at the Waldorf Astoria, you know, stuff like that. And I would kick myself now, but for the most part, I appreciated most of the meetings and states people we would meet. And they were always very, cordial to us as kids and always ready to issue advice. And, you know, so it was a pleasant experience. I was a student at LaGuardia High School of Music and Art and Performing Arts, the Thame School. So I had this terrific double life. You know, I was in Spanish class one day in Spain the next week with the boys choir. I was actually on track to be an opera singer. I went to the Hart School of Music, the University of Hartford. And I went there on scholarship, studied with the great Jerome Pruitt, a fabulous singer. If you ever want to hear his work, go watch the movie called The Music Teacher. He does the voiceovers for that, where he actually plays dueling tenors. So he sings both roles. Oh, wow. It's out of this world. It's amazing. I did that and then graduated. And my plan was to go to Europe, and I got sidetracked in a pleasant way during an audition where I was invited to actually come back and audition for the role of ringmaster for Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey, which was something I thought was cute. And I'd do it maybe for a year or two, turned into 18. And a wife and two children later, it was really the greatest experience of my life thus far. And, you know, after that show folded in 2017, I moved to Florida. And so since then, I've been doing a lot of professional hosting and speaking. And, you know, I'm called back into the ring every now and then to cover for shows and things like that. So it's a lot of freelance work. I've been doing some writing with CircusTalk.com. I've been much more creative lately. I've started a new talk show that I have on YouTube called Incent Ring, where we're interviewing really wonderful people with great stories who really have, I think, a lot of great content to offer the public. I've also started Ringmaster Storytime. People will not let me out of that suit. So Ringmaster Storytime every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. live on Facebook Live on my fan page, Last Ringmaster fan page. So, you know, I'm doing things like that. And really, I'm in the thick of the hustle. You know, like everybody else, I'm in the thick of the hustle. And it's, you know, it can be a drag. And it's also exhilarating at the same time because, you know, every step of progress, I appreciate it much more than when I was the darling ringmaster of the greatest show on earth. Mm-hmm. And that check was plenteous and it came in every week. And, you know, I was going to some wonderful, exciting place via train car. You know, I mean, I lived on a train. It was great. I had the greatest life. And in many respects, I like where I've pivoted because it really has taught me the great lesson of, you know, eventually pruning will happen to you in life, and comfort is an enemy. You know, I think the great actor Denzel Washington said that in one of his acceptance speeches, and it was really, it just hit home. He said, ease is more detrimental than hardship. And it's very true. You know, we are an evolving species. We have to be in a constant state of growth. And, you know, look, comfort, it's nice, it's seducing, but, you know, I really don't believe God crafted us for that. I think we're to constantly continue to unfold. And I think it keeps us humble, quite frankly, because we start finding out things about ourselves in discomfort that we would have never found out we had, you know, gifts we would have never found we had. You know, I always love, you know, the famous televangelist Joel Osteen talks about it all the time. You know, he's the happiest man on TV and he talks about it. He's like, you know, 17 years working for his father who proceeded and built the ministry up. It's like he would have never thought he would step forward, had no training. That wasn't what he wanted to do. And doing that, he discovered talents in himself he didn't know he had. He was like, I didn't know I was an author. And I didn't know I could get out here and speak to people. I was behind the scenes tech guy. And, you know, so I think in many respects, I'm really excited about where I am right now at this moment in my life. I mean, it's taxing, of course. It's annoying. It's not consistent. It's unpredictable. You know, it's definitely not easy on the finances, but it forces me to grow. It forces me to think bigger of myself and to dig deeper. And eventually, I believe I'll strike that pot of gold and then we'll restart all over again. As the great Tony Award winner Andre DeShields said, you know, the top of one mountain is the bottom of another. So keep climbing.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's also where you find solutions and, you know, creativity that you would never have mined because you didn't have to. But suddenly when you're in a position where you have to get a little more scrappy, you know, you got to figure some things out. It forces you to think about things in different contexts and it gives you a drive that wasn't there before, for sure. Love all that. There's so much great stuff in there, and I want to unpack some of that. So I'd love to dial things back. You mentioned, being in the boys choir. And so normally I ask, my guests to think back to a time in their childhood that spoke to them to say, this was a moment where I knew that I was a creative person. And so I'm imagining that for you was centered around music. But if there's other vivid memories you have of creativity in your childhood, feel free to share something that maybe stands out to you. And then along with that, how did you even get into the boys choir?
Yeah, my creative spark was actually encouraged by my mother. And so that was actually long before I even knew about the boys choir. I would draw and I would do things like that. And I see it in my children now, who are actually far more advanced than I was at their age. I would draw, I would sing, and I would write. I think writing was the first, my first love, really. I was in fourth grade when I found out there was something there. And it's always that wonderful adult, at least it was in my case. It was always David Goetz was his name. He was my fourth grade teacher. It was at a public school and it's so strange how you come to these places, because I'd been going to Christian private school up until that point, and I'd grown tired of it, and I told my mother, I said, look, I want to go to public school. So I twisted her arm and begged her, and so finally she put me into school, PS 166, I think it was. And I tell you, there is a difference between private and public, and this school was the pits. But the gifts it got me were two things. One, it got me back in the correct grade. When I was in my private school, this was weird, there was a principal who conspired against me because she hated my brother. It was just weird. So she somehow manipulated and had me left back a grade when I started. And I was in first grade. She had me left back in first grade. Would you believe that? And I didn't know what was going on. And my mother being a trusty parent and these teachers, that's what they thought. The next year comes this glorious teacher named Miss Patton. I'll never forget her. And when I think about her now, I'm thinking how much of the creative spark was nurtured in me through her, because Miss Patton really was like an angel. She was this gorgeous dark-skinned woman who wore her hair naturally and it was braided. And she was so above all of the teachers there. Like, even the person, she was just above them. But she didn't play herself like that. She was so, she was strict. But she just was so brilliant. And she was so kind to me. And she actually informed my mother, because I think they told her, I told my mom that I had a reading issue. And Miss Patton was like, he doesn't have a reading issue. There's nothing wrong with him. But she was patient with me, took me through and everything. And, she really, I think in many respects, saved my consciousness in regards to that school. And looking back on it, it's really remarkable. I'm not bitter over it. But anyway, it was Miss Patton. She was wonderful. She also spoke French. She was a musician. She just had all these things going on. It just was such a pleasant presence in my life at that time. And I was like in first grade, and her energy was so good to me. So after begging my mother to go to public school, it's funny, we went in there, met with the principal, and he just goes, so what grade is he in? And my mother looks at me, I look at her, and I just set the correct grade I was supposed to be in. So that's how I got back into the correct grade. And it was there. I didn't stay very long because this school was public. And but I ran into my teacher there, David Goetz. And he was so kind to me. I remember he had this wonderful Jewish afro and everything. He was real cool. And, he would give us writing assignments. And he had called my mother. He took the time to call her and let her know, hey, you know, your son has a gift. He can, this is something he's really good at. I didn't know anything. I was just going out of my imagination, but that was something that really helped. Eventually I left that school because it was just a bit much. I was too green and I went back to Jesus. I went to another, to another private school. And I did that for a while. And then eventually it was during the Christmas season of 1987. And my mother approached me about the Boys Choir of Harlem. I had a god brother who had already ventured into it. And she'd asked around about it. And she asked me if that was something I would be interested in. I always wanted to travel. You know, I'm growing up in the bosom of New York City with all those different people who I was curious about. And so I wanted to travel. That was the motivation. I could care less about singing. I just was like, man, these kids look like me and they're going all over the world. That's what I want to do. And silly me, I thought it was going to be like, you know, church choir, you know. And I get there, do the audition, I get in, and I'm ready to get my ticket and passport. But it was, I was 11 years old, and it had to be the most wonderful gift I ever got in learning how to really work for something. And that's when I learned, you know, it's one thing to have the creative spark and to have an interest. It's another thing to really be dogged about it, to love it enough where you're really willing to suffer for it. And boy, did I suffer. It's like, it was the longest 18 months of my life before I ever started performing. Because, I mean, they taught everything. You had to learn to read music. You had to, you know, learn to use your breath, learn to actually sing. And, you know, I didn't know it was an actual mechanical craft to singing. You know, you had to learn the science of stuff. You had to learn how to, you had to learn etiquette because you're going to be an ambassador. You're going to be meeting different people. You had to learn how to stand. You had to learn how to present yourself. It was like a finishing school for boys. You know, it was just amazing. And it was strict. I mean, the standards were very high. You know, a lot of people have been musing about this popular documentary, The Last Dance, and Michael Jordan, and was he a bully or what have you in practice. And I just laughed because I said, you know, most folks wouldn't have survived our choir rehearsals. I mean, the founding director, God rest his soul, Dr. Walter J. Turnbull, a genius. A very accomplished musician and singer in his own right, really set the bar for us. And that really, really has been the root of everything for me ever since. I mean, he set the bar for us. All these boys, you know, he didn't let us use circumstances. I mean, I had to step over crack valves to get to rehearsal. And Harlem was Harlem back then. It wasn't, you know, Starbucks and yoga pants, women walking around in yoga pants as they do now. This was like, you know, in the middle of the crack era. And, you know, going into that building to rehearse there was like this beautiful escape. You know, it was this beautiful escape. Like, you knew you were safe and you knew you were doing something extraordinary because the rewards were so wonderful. I mean, we were on Carnegie Hall stage and we were performing with everybody from like Stevie Wonder to Placido Domingo and Pavarotti. And, you know, it was just like this charming life for a bunch of teenagers, you know. The travel was just exciting. And it was something so amazing about being able to earn what it is you really loved. I mean, I remember when I really started getting in my groove the first time. So I started at 11. I didn't hit the stage until I was 13. And it felt like forever. My mother would not let me quit. I begged every other day. She wouldn't let me quit. She was like, you're gonna see how far you can go. You're gonna keep doing it. I'm glad she didn't let me quit. I'm glad she said no. Because when I started performing, it was like I didn't stop. And the experiences were just off the wall. I remember one particular tour everybody wanted to go on. I was 13. It was to Japan. But we had a re-audition. So I was already in a performing choir. But to go there, what he did was we had soprano, alto, tenor, bass. So we knew we had auditions coming up. We had the rep. So he would pick one person per section. and you had to audition before jury. And you had to know your part and sing your part. And boy, I remember being so nervous. And I worked so hard. I mean, I worked so hard. And when, you know, when they picked you, you know, they would read from a list, you know, it's like that bulletin, you know, and, you know, this is how many sopranos, this is how many altos, tenors, bass, and when you heard your name, it's like, ah, you know, but it really gave me a sense of, you know what, that's what this is about. You, nothing's going to be given to you, no matter how talented you may be, no matter how much promise you may have. You've got to dig in, and you've got to, I mean, really, I think what it is I think of it like courtship, you know. Your talent reveals itself like that pretty girl, you know, she bats her eyes and you, and then you find out, oh, wow, she's not easy. What? I actually have to be a gentleman. I have to actually court her. And that's how it is, you know. Music made me court her. And everything else, you know, it made me court. You know, it's like, you got to work for this. And I was willing to, and that was a great lesson for me. And the rewards, seeing the rewards in real time. Being a kid who was larger than my age, and of course, if you're the black kid who's tall, you're supposed to be playing basketball or football or whatever. And it was a joke among my friends when we were growing up, because my athletic prowess leaves much to be desired. I completely destroyed that stereotype. But here's what was funny and cool. Because I had this boy choir and I had this success, it was like my friends were like my biggest defenders, because they were like, yeah, man, yeah, he don't play ball, but he's spending his summers overseas. I just saw him on PBS the other day. So it's, and I knew doing that, I also learned that you grow, you earn, and then you, in many respects, you become an example. So that early in my life, I was saying, I had friends, you know, when we became men, they would tell me later, you know, when I saw you doing that stuff, I was like, wow, this can really happen. And so it made me want to pursue what I really wanted to do. So you learn that in many respects, you have an obligation to what it is that's stirring inside you, because essentially it's not about you. You know, the world is round. So it really is about you emitting something to someone else, you know, and that's one of the things when I think back now, I think back fondly of all the mentors I had and how generous they were. And the more accomplished they were, the more generous they seemed to be and the more patient they seemed to be, especially if they saw a spark in you. You know, like I got to work with the great Tony Award winning Jeffrey Holder, who also was an acclaimed artist and really Renaissance man. The guy was just stinking brilliant, you know. I knew him from, okay, again, youth is wasted on the young. I knew him from the 7-Up commercials.
Right? Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he was so much more. And it wasn't until we worked with him directly that I found out about who he really was. And he was our director for the Boys Choir of Harlem and Friends on Broadway. Now, I didn't know he was the Tony Award-winning director of The Wiz, which was my favorite musical. You know, I didn't know that was him. And here I was working with him, and he was so, I mean, he was just so big physically and just spiritually. He was such a beautiful man. And he was so unassuming. And he was so gloriously masculine and this unapologetic artist, and his wife, who is this accomplished legendary dancer, Carmen de Lavallade, was like his muse, you know, like he would actually design her clothes. I mean, I was fascinated by them. Like, I mean, he was just such a personality, and he was so kind to me. You know, he actually would pull me over during rehearsals, and when we were rehearsing for this Broadway show, it was so intense because, you know, we were regular kids. We were going to school. But when we started rehearsals at 4 p.m. in the afternoon after school. But for the Broadway show, usually our rehearsals on average were 4 to 7 p.m. But for the Broadway show, it would go until like 9, 10 o'clock, you know, to get ready for this thing. And he was so cool, so generous. And he would pull me to the side and he would tell me, he would say to me, he said, "You can make it, man." He said, "You have all the stuff you need." He wasn't saying this like in a general, "I'm just encouraging this kid." He literally saw something in me that, I mean, it stunned me that he would say that. I was 16. I'll never forget that. And I think my life has been blessed with a lot of grace of people who, for whatever reasons, until this day, they continue to see me in ways I don't always see myself. And in many ways, I thank God I don't. You know, mm-hmm. my head probably would explode or something, but they see something. And I mean, that's such a wonderful thing because it's something I harp on with parents, teachers, adults. You know, I always don't be dream killers. Don't be dream killers. And it doesn't matter how weird that kid may seem right now. You don't know who that is right now. You have no idea. You know, Ray Charles's mother had no idea when he went blind that she was setting him up to be the great Ray Charles. She was the one who thought, you know what, I can't do anything for you. So I'm going to send you to this school. And he, you know, of course, being a little boy, being attached to his mother, his brother had just died, the whole thing. I mean, of course that was traumatic, but look what he became. He became everything she set him up to be. She was the one who told him, no cane, no guitar, you're not going to be a beggar. You're going to be treated with the same dignity as a sighted person. And that's why he behaved in the way he did and his fierce independence to the point where he owned his masters. That all came from his mother, who was a teenager when she had him. The fact that she put that in him and he would become what he did. And there's so many other stories like that, you know? I mean, and I get goosebumps thinking about it, but it's my big thing to parents and adults all the time. Do not be dream killers. Don't be dream. I don't care how absurd you think it is, you know? I mean, as long as the kid is not harming themselves or someone else, then let it happen. There are things, my son, for instance, I mean, he's like, kind of all over the place, but he's focused on music. You know, he's the nerd of the family, and he's been that way since he was 2. I could see there were things he could do that were completely beyond me, you know? And, you know, he's into his kind of world. And, you know, I laugh about it all the time. I said, look, it definitely isn't me. My wife scratches her head. She goes, it's not coming from me, but it's legal. You know, it's creative, it's quirky, but it's his kind of world. And, you know, the thing is you just go, okay, well, we'll encourage it. And we've seen him thriving in so many areas, you know, his music, especially, you know, we hear from his teachers all the time, but the thing, of course, you're reveling in most of all is the kind of person he is, you know, the fact that, you know, when he's away from us, you know, he's not that kid we're going to get that horrible call about, you know, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, most of all, and that was the thing when I was in voice choir, it was, you know, as hard as our director was, and he could be this guy, he was so hard. He used to say to us, if you can survive me, you can survive anybody. Yeah. And he said he always stated, he said, my goal isn't to make you into world-class musicians. That's fine if you become one. And you're going to be world class while you're under my baton. But my goal is to make you into credible, good citizens. And it was many of the lessons that were taught to us through the rigors of learning a repertoire that was very thick and diverse, which is why I have a very eclectic ear to this day. And which is why I have an appreciative ear that doesn't have this kind of hierarchy in music. Like, I don't think of classical music or jazz as being any better than hip hop or popular music. I just don't think in those things. And I know a lot of people, especially musicians, who think that way. And I've never been that way. Studying opera, I tell you, was a trip because you have people with this hierarchy mentality. And when I was in the Boys Choir of Harlem, Mozart was no more important to me than Billy Strayhorn. You know, I didn't see or Earth, Wind, and Fire. I mean, it gave us the ability to decipher music, to get to the message of it, to get to the aesthetic, and see that all the only difference in the style, so to speak, is how it was expressed. But in many of these things, these people are saying a lot of the same things. You know, they're not doing anything in particularly highbrow or whatever. They're saying the same things, and they just express it differently. And so that was the gift he gave us. But most importantly, it was be a good citizen. And that really helped me in good stead when I would venture to Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey.
Yeah. You know, a lot of that is such important foundation, and someone doesn't see that upon the surface, right? They can hear your bio and they can see little snippets of things that you've done with your life and think like, oh, wow, that's amazing. Because they're seeing like a result, they're seeing fruit, but they're not seeing what went into all that, the foundation, the sacrifice, the high standards that really sets you up for so many of those opportunities to be ready to step into them, and putting you around the right people, and you know, the favor and the belief that people spoke into you. I mean, all of that's such a gift, but you still have to show up.
Absolutely.
You still have to figure out, okay, I want to do this. I want to step into the challenge and become the person that I need to be able to do these things, you know?
I have a buddy of mine, childhood friend of mine, who is a basketball coach, and he was in a recent interview. And he said basically that, you know, they were asking him about, you know, what do you do with a kid that, you know, they come to you and, you know, they may have some talent or whatever, but they're just not putting all they have into it. He said, listen, he said, I can teach you moves. I can teach you how to dribble the ball. I can teach you how to shoot properly. I can teach you technique. I can teach you all the technical aspects of the game of basketball. Said, but effort and heart, I can't give that to you. You know, I can't give that to you. And so that really is something that's an internal, that's something you have to have. And I think you only really know you have it in the bowels of baptism by fire. Like, that's why you have to go through it. I remember giving a speech to my alma mater, LaGuardia High School. I was invited back some years later to give the commencement address. And I told them that, you know, don't beware of what you say you love, because if you're not willing to suffer for it, you know, because it will test you. You know, music really, like much like most things, is a jealous taskmaster. You know, I mean, it's going to test you. There's a famous saying about circus in that respect by, I think, Henry North, who spoke of, you know, how circus is like this jealous wench. She breaks you, she takes you through, and yet there's no other life I'd rather live. And it's true, you know, that it's like marriage. It's like anything that's significant like that, you're going to go through. You're going to go through these seasons. And that's where you discover the love. You don't discover love in summer. You know, you don't discover it in spring. You discover it in winter. You discover it in those unpredictable seasons when it's testing you, when it's trying you. And fortunately for me, you know, I can say without a shadow of a doubt, you know, you're not self-made. Nobody's self-made. It really was the fact that I think had my mother accommodated my mediocrity, my life would have been very different. Had she said, okay, like so many parents do today. And I warned them of that. You know, the kid, you know, they're switching from one thing to another, you know, versus violin, versus this. I'm like, you know, you have to dare them to settle in on something. You'll figure out if it's not for them. But if they tuck and run from the first sign of challenge, they'll be doing that with everything else in their life. And that's what you see a lot of this, what we do. We do it a lot in everything. You know, we do it in our personal relationships. We do it in any kind of vocation we claim we want to pursue. You know, I mean, and unfortunately, I think we're building this society, this Instagram society, where people are seeing ordinary folks become these behemoth personalities who are well paid for pictures and for, I guess, personality driven content or what have you. What's hilarious about that is, even that's work. You know, I mean, a lot of people don't realize, like, you know, with, you know, the Kardashians, say what you want. You know, you're not, they're not going to be that relevant this long just because they spray tan and have big booties. You know, I mean, they really learn how that thing, it's work. It's work. You know, there's something to it. It's not my cup of tea. But it's work. There's something they've done. That's why so many people fail at it, because they're not really willing to do what others do who do succeed in that. There's that stuff is work. You know, it's not just, you know, Insta fame isn't what you think it is. You know, whatever it is you want. I mean, I think it's that's the heart of it. You know, you have to resign yourself to the fact that being uncomfortable is just as vital to the process as anything else. You just have to go through it. You know, yeah. You just have to go through it. I'm in the midst of a fitness regimen that, you know, of course I have to get up every day. I've literally dragged myself out of bed every day to do it. But I'm so proud of myself when I'm in like the third week and I haven't missed a day. And it's like, you know, it's like, look, you've got to put in the effort, because consistency is everything. Being consistent, being willing to fail and start over again and figure it out and you know, feel a bit lonely, you know, especially when you're an artist. You know, it's the loneliest place in the world. Absolutely, it only becomes crowded when you're successful and everybody swears they saw it in you. But you know, it's a lonely, lonely place, because especially if you don't come from that, you know, and anytime you do something that's out of the peer view or the norm of what people expect of you is always, it will always try you. I was so fortunate. My mother built, I think she's a sociological genius, because, you know, from when I was, and she actually told me this, she said, when you were in my womb, I would speak life to you. I would speak up to you. So I really believe there's something to that, because I've never had a shaky confidence in anything. Even when my friends would tease me about sports or whatever, it didn't bother me. Like I didn't care. And like other kids learned that about me, like, man, this guy, he's not like, you can't pull me into your little vortex of crazy. You know, I wasn't taken in by peer pressure, which made me stand out. You know, I was kind of a friend to everybody, you know, and so I didn't have that issue where I needed this group or I didn't have that. And that came from being rooted in confidence that was just given to me very early. And that was a gift. That was a real gift, because I know of people who've had to build that up. They've had to find ways to get that, because confidence is the genesis of it all. You know, confidence is just another way of saying courage, and it's the genesis of all virtues. I mean, you really can't enjoy any of it unless you have that in you, it leads to self-love and self-care and an awareness of yourself that I had really quite young. And I thank God every day, because I was truly blessed, because I really know, I know people, I've seen it, I've talked to grown men who still are figuring themselves out because they were built up on unsteady ground, even though they may have accomplished great things. The tragedy is they can't even enjoy it because they're never sure of it, you know, and that's the other thing. Having that with my mother, which was my root, it made everything else really possible. and made it worthwhile and made it work. The Boys Choir of Harlem could not work for me if I didn't have that, because the Boys Choir of Harlem wasn't perfect. And I don't believe those programs or organizations like that are meant to save your kid's life. I think if you're sending your kid to some organization to save their life, you're doing it wrong. Those are there to enhance them. So when I went into the Boys Choir, or when I went to LaGuardia High School, or when I went to the Hart School of Music, when I ventured into Ringling Brothers, I was able to decipher what was good for me and what wasn't so good for me. And that's how I was always able to make the best of those opportunities for myself. And that's, you know, again, it does come back to the home. And yeah. If you don't have it in the home, I strongly encourage people, you know, you may think it's hokey, you may think it's cheesy, but there is something to lifting yourself up and to speaking positively about yourself, and to really, those affirmations, they matter. I mean, the whole book of Psalms is just that, you know. I mean, the beauty behind that book, I mean, you study the life of King David and this shepherd boy, who, I mean, he wrote a lot of stuff when he was running around with sheep and he was alone. And if you know the backstory to when he was anointed king, his father didn't even recognize him. Right. I mean, that's, you know, when you think about that, I mean, so, you know, there was some kind of dysfunction there where his father presented all of his sons and he's not even thinking of him. And he's the one God is thinking of. And that's what I like to people to understand. You know, you're the one God is thinking of. You actually do have purpose. You actually do matter. And don't be seduced by your present circumstance. Look, the way I tell people is it's only going to make your book that much more charming. Nobody wants to hear about the guy who's had it all. And, you know, they want to hear about what did you overcome?
Right. Yeah. You because know, every story has to have that point of conflict. Because otherwise, yeah. Then it's just a boring story, right?
Well, you know,
And I was just going to say, you know, like I know we're going to be coming to the wrapping to our time soon. We haven't even touched on your time in the circus yet. But I would just love to just hear a little bit about just what you're doing now and like how you've pivoted at certain points in your life, right? You've pivoted from the Boys Choir, then you went into circus, right? And then the circus closes down, and then you find yourself at another point at which you need to pivot into reinventing yourself again.
Yes.
What does that look like, and how do you do that? Because I think, especially the times we're living in right now, you know, there's probably a lot of that going on where people are finding themselves needing to reinvent themselves. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little wisdom into that from your own experiences of like, how do you do that and find your way through that so that you can come to the next thing that you need to, you know, the next iteration of what your creative path should look like?
Right. So here's the thing I've discovered since being in this chrysalis is that the journey is constant. So if we can remove ourselves from having a destination mindset, the journey is constant. You'll have these points on the journey where, oh, you've arrived at a certain place. But believe me, as long as you live, you're going to be constantly in a state of reinvention and evolution. It's just how we're made. You know, there's scripture that says, you know, God will prune you. You know, I mean, it'll be just for the sake of pruning you. You know, you got to cut off familiar habits and people and things to encourage fruitfulness and growth, because our whole purpose is, in essence, to be fruitful and multiply, to grow, to build, you know, to glorify. And so if you have that mindset, first you start with that. And so when the circus closed down, the first step in the process I had to accept for myself was I needed to rest. I was on the road for 18 years. And so this is, you have to think of it individually. Everybody doesn't have the same thing. Certain people who were on the show just for 2 years, they didn't have the same invested interest that I did. So of course, you know, you want to work and, you know, you're in a dilemma where you're like, oh, I need work. I need to do these things. But, you know, rest may be a part of your pivot. You know, rest, breathe, stop, you know, think. Take things in, veg a little bit. It's fine. Go through that Netflix series. Sometimes it's okay to just blah, you know, sleep in the middle of the day, whatever, because you have to reset. Change, as I've said before, is, and sudden change, of course, it's invasive, it's traumatic. And like surgery, you know, you have to rest post-op. You have to do what your doctor tells you. Post-op, take your time, don't be anxious, let your body heal. And once you go through that, I like to, you know, I use the analogy for the word grit. And I broke it down, you know, get moving, you know, get moving. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, where you want to be Mr. Olympia or something, but, you know, get moving, some kind of physical exercise or something you can do that just gets you physically active. You know, reach out to people you know, don't be seduced by solitude, because we have a tendency to believe we're always alone, you know, that this is unique to us. And it's a lie. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. You will be surprised what you're reaching out to others would do, not only for them, but for you. I mean, me reaching out has actually been a benefit. It actually helped me acquire work, you know, because I happened to call somebody at a certain time and they were like thinking of something, and all of a sudden I fit into what they were thinking about. So reach out. You don't know where that might lead.
Yeah.
And be intentional about your day. You know, and it doesn't have to be something grand and glorious. You know, if you're a writer, you know, maybe all you want to do is just write out 250 words of free form, whatever. Just be intentional, slowly but surely. Be intentional, but be consistent about it, whatever it is, you know. And of course, T, be thankful. Every day, be thankful. Believe me, you have something to be thankful for. Even the pain of the change is something to be thankful for. There are a lot of people who wish they could feel. I'll never forget the story. There was this young lady who had a rare disease where she could not feel pain. So what does that mean? If she was in peril, she wouldn't even know it. And her mother would pray all the time, I wish she could feel pain. I wish she could feel pain, because the girl would, she'd bust her head over, all sorts of things, and she wouldn't know it. And so it's all a gift. I do believe, I truly believe all things work out for the good of those who love them. I believe life is working for you. Be a little patient with yourself. You know, and that's something, these are all things I had to learn, because I'm not patient, especially if you've had success. This is hard for those of us who've had massive success in some way. You know, I live in a place where there are murals of me in the arena.
Yeah.
And it's challenging for me to get work in that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That can play with your mind if you're not careful.
Yeah.
But you have to be very adamant about being gentle and kind with yourself. And also honor the present. Honor the present. Don't do the replays. And this goes for especially those who've had those accomplishments, and you were the guy, you were the man, you know, you were queen bee, you know. Look, allow yourself to mourn your past, celebrate it, but move on. Allow yourself to go into the new adventure, because the more you're holding yourself back there, you're using old tools that aren't designed to let you grow in the present. Embrace the present. Embrace it. Put your feet down into it. Don't think about the anxieties of the future either. I get it. You know, you have bills to pay. That usually is the big one. You know, it's the money. I got to pay bills. I got to just embrace the present. Do not, because, you know, the beauty of it is we know change is the constant. You never know how your fortunes may turn anyway. So why are you being so anxious about it? I say, do the work that you feel in your heart to do, that you feel drawn to do. Be consistent about it. Fretting will do you no good. I learned all these things the hard way.
Yeah.
And that's what I share with people. You know, you're, and also remember again and again, you're always going to be pivoting. You're always going to, life is always going to toss you a curveball for better and for worse. You know, I mean, Ringling Brothers was a curveball to me for the better. I didn't have a vision board. Oh, I'm going to grow up and go to the circuit. I had nothing. That was not even in my, I was talking about the opera stage. I wasn't talking about Madison Square Garden, you know, or Amway Center and all that. You know what I mean? That never even crossed my mind. Here I had, so, you know, I think you just have to have it in your heart and mind that, you know what, some wonderful things can happen for you. I think you have to keep your head up. Yes, positive thinking matters, because sometimes that's all you have, you know, while, you know, I would also challenge people, you know, minimize your media intake, because it really is no good. I mean, especially now the news, I don't mean to insult anybody in the media, but their goal is content driven clicks, ratings. And so they're going to put the most salacious, the most attention grabbing thing out there. They're not going to put positive spin out there because we don't click it.
Yeah.
You know? And so, I mean, feed, and that's the I heard Tony Robbins say this. He said, you know, when he was going through his stuff early, you know, before he became Tony Robbins, he said one of the things he did was he just filled his mind with knowledge. And that's the thing, whatever it is you do, pray, meditate, read your whatever, if you're a religious person, if you're not, whatever, I would say soak up, inhale as much knowledge, positivity as you can, good music. You can control your environment. You can do all those things. Instead of following, you know, Big Booty at Instagram, follow the one great affirmations, you know, follow the motivations on Twitter instead of having that argument on Facebook. You know, put some light out there. There's a lot of light out there. You just have to be daring to go out and bask in it.
Yeah.
And let it heal you. Let it heal you. Don't ever think it's too hokey. Don't ever think it's beneath you. Don't ever think it's not working. It's just like if you're saving money. You know, you may be feeling busted and disgusted, but keep putting them coins away and see what happens. You're investing. And that's the big thing. Invest in yourself, invest in the proper state of your spirit. And a proper state of your spirit and mind is righteousness. It really is. I really believe that. I mean, I really believe God wants us to have a really great time with our lives.
Mm. Yeah. So much good stuff in there. I appreciate you sharing that. And I know that that's going to be helpful for so many people because it's things that we need to keep returning to again and again.
Yeah.
I'd love to just, as we wrap things up for you, just to share a little bit. So you mentioned earlier, you're doing like a talk show thing now and you're doing some voiceover work. So let us know a little bit about that and where can people find you and tap into those resources.
Wonderful. You can always find me on any of the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, at Last Ringmaster. You can also find me at my website, bigtopvoice.com. And you can always get in contact with me that way. I finally broke down and bought me a voiceover rig. I was gifted a beautiful Neumann mic from a sound guy on Ringling Brothers. At the end of it, he gave me this Neumann mic. I was like, you know, I mean, that thing costs a kidney. And, you know, I've been looking at it for about 3 years. And I finally said, okay, I need to get the accessories. And I finally did. And I just recorded a wonderful voiceover for the Main Street Electrical podcast. They welcomed me to do that. And I've been doing a lot of voiceovers since I left the show, but at other studios. And it became clear that a lot of clientele, they're looking for people who have at-home equipment. So I finally do, and I am open to anyone. Of course, I'm on LinkedIn as well. You can find me on LinkedIn and, you know, reach out to me if you, you have any voiceover requests. I do it all. I'll do audiobooks, industrial, commercials, whatever. I actually finished a gentleman, he wrote an original animated series, and I went in and did a few voices for him on that. And that was fun. It was great, you know. And a lot of what sustained me is really relationships. People who know me or know of me and who I've worked with in some way. And that's the big thing. I tell people, if you're going to be a master of anything, master relationships. Mm-hmm. Master relationships.
Yeah.
Because believe me, nobody wants to work with a jerk.
Absolutely.
No matter how talented you are. You know, there's that. And of course, there's now the new talk show. I love to run my mouth, as you can see. And I happen to be blessed with, again, relationships, having cross paths with some really remarkable people. So I have this new show that I've that's featured on YouTube called In Centering. Thus far, we've had 3 episodes. We started out with Kevin Bernardo's, the proprietor of Bernardo's Circus. He's just a gem. He has a great story of how he just built that show from the ground up, dealing with the challenges of, you know, having finally built a show up to being so profitable and one of the hit shows in the industry, now having to pivot during, you know, what we went through with COVID-19, you know, and he was very enlightening on the things he did and the steps he began to take. I interviewed a wonderful gentleman by the name of William Fortune in episode 2. He's the author of Sacred and Sacrosanct. He's a poet. He's a circus artist, stuntman, actor. He's like, he hates the word Renaissance man, but he really is. I mean, his journey has taken him from Ringling Brothers to Cirque du Soleil to just all over the place. He's an amazing individual. So much light comes out of him. He has his own, he created his own philosophy. That's what he calls a philosophy that he displays every day, really. You can see him on Instagram or Facebook, and he speaks wonderfully and eloquently about a variety of self-help topics. And then my latest episode was with the wonderful Sandra Scheller, who's the acclaimed author of the book Try to Remember, Never Forget, Memoirs of Holocaust Survivor Ruth Sachs, who was her mother, who I met, who was a tremendous woman, just a beautiful soul. And the episode, it was tremendous. I mean, I've known Sandra for well over 20 years. And it was really the last decade or so she decided to write this book. And it's been highly successful, created a documentary. She created a exhibition that's featured in Chula Vista called Ruth, Remember Us, the Holocaust. And just hearing her tell her mother's story, I call her an apostle for her mother, but she tells her story so eloquently, how she dealt with it, how she happened to find out about it. She was 6 years old when she heard her mother scream in the middle of the night, and she didn't know what was going on, and her father the next day explained to her what the Holocaust was. And so there were so many things she said she would find out about her family by happenstance, but she finally broke down and documented it with this book. So these are the terrific 3 episodes I have. I have another episode I'm working on now, and I'm going to keep on going with that. And of course, I love to still entertain families and children. So every Sunday at 8 p.m. on my Facebook page, fan page at Last Ringmaster is Ringmaster Story Time at 8 p.m. And there I am in Ringmaster garb, and I'll read an original, well, not an original, but I'll read a classic tale. So I always tell everybody, you know, tune in before you turn in. And I read a classic tale, and, you know, we just have some fun. It's no more than a half hour, and people love it, and the response has been great. So I want to expand upon it eventually.
Nice. So many good things in there. I love to see that you're active and using your various talents and leaning into those relationships, like you said. I think that's key for anybody in any stage that they're in. And I just look forward to even more of what you're doing and to see how it continues to take shape. So I want to thank you for spending this time with us today. And man, I feel like we could definitely hang out all day, especially Absolutely. With the experiences you've had and the wealth of knowledge that you have. So appreciate you sharing what you did today with us. And man, thank you again so much.
Hey, man, I'm privileged. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.